A young perspective on hot-button issues around the world. This is The Hub.
Hello and welcome to the program. I'm Wang Guan in Beijing. In the year 2023, China's automobile export volume skyrocketed to the top globally for the first time, with a significant increase in sales of new energy vehicles, or NEVs. Not only has this domestic NEV industry chain continuously improved in recent years, but they now account for a very large share of the global market. So what's behind the impressive growth of China's NEV sector? How does it fare in the bigger picture of China's high-quality development? And is China trying to outdo the West by dominating this market, as some foreign media have suggested? Let's first look at the backstory to better understand what's going on.
A revolution is quietly spreading in the heart of the world's second largest economy. China now stands at the forefront of a global shift toward cleaner, greener mobility. Leading this transformation are new energy vehicles, or NEVs, a term that encompasses a new breed of electric cars, plug-in hybrids, and hydrogen fuel cell vehicles. In the first quarter of last year, China exported over 1 million vehicles, surpassing Japan and Germany to become the world's largest vehicle exporter for the first time. Domestically, over 400 NEV manufacturers call it home, and the quick expansion of the NEV industry is underpinned by an ambitious national plan that aims for NEVs to constitute 20% of new car sales by 2025. Stimulating the consumption of new energy vehicles will help boost effective investment and also meet the needs of public travel while promoting the green and low-carbon development of transportation industry. We are also accelerating the construction of charging infrastructure for new energy vehicles.
China controls over 70% of the global lithium battery market and has installed more than 800,000 public charging points, more than any other nation in the world. But despite some incredible feats, the road to innovation is paved with challenges. The infrastructure still struggles to keep up with demand. For instance, in major cities, the ratio of electric vehicles to charging points is roughly 5-1, leading to bottlenecks at public charging stations. Moreover, while NEVs reduce tailpipe emissions, the carbon footprint on the production line and the sourcing of materials like lithium and nickel raise environmental concerns. And on the global stage, geopolitical tensions over technology transfer and supply chain security add layers of complexity to China's NEV ambitions. In the US, vehicles manufactured in China or assembled with a significant amount of Chinese components have become more difficult to qualify for tax credits under the Inflation Reduction Act. This legislation encourages both domestic production and shifting supply chains away from China. The European Union has enacted similar acts.
Global markets are now flooded with cheaper Chinese electric cars, and their price is kept artificially low by huge state subsidies. This is distorting our market. And as we do not accept this distortion from the inside in our market, we do not accept this from the outside. So I can announce today that the Commission is launching an anti-subsidy investigation into electric vehicles coming from China.
Political imperatives stress the need for self-contained core technology and supply chain. But as for now, the momentum of China's NEV sector is not going to slow down. BYD dethroned Tesla as the world's best-selling electric vehicle maker, selling more EVs in the fourth quarter of 2023. So, will China's vision to transform its entire automotive landscape become a reality, or is it just a flash in the pan? And how fast will the development of NEVs contribute to the global effort towards sustainability?
For more discussions, I'm joined today by Tyson Jonamy. He's the Vice President of Data and Analytics at JD Power, an American data analytics, software, and consumer intelligence company. And also we have with us Xing Lei. He's the co-host of the podcast China EVs and More, and the former chief editor of China Auto Review. Gentlemen, welcome to the program. Tyson, let me turn to you first. There are so many news these days going around. Apple ditched its plan, which has been in the making for many years, to make an electric car. 2,000 employees are now shifted into an AI department. Meanwhile, we've heard from the Chinese Premier Li Qiang during the annual legislative session's government work report, whereby he said China's EVs are making somewhere around 60% of the global EV market. What do you make of these figures, and how does these numbers, especially concerning the Chinese EV and EVs, capture the scale and capacity of the Chinese electric car market?
There is no doubt that the Chinese automakers are leading the world right now in terms of EV production. And certainly the Chinese market with EV sales are leading the way globally right now and taking on some very big names. I mean, what's been so interesting about the automotive industry lately, as you mentioned, I mean, companies like Apple, Google, others are having a foothold in the automotive industry really for the first time ever. And what they're finding is producing automobiles at scale is actually quite difficult. It's much harder than it seemed on the surface. And that's why we're seeing Apple, you know, rejigger their investment and put their employees on something else, because they found it's kind of difficult to make cars at scale and at a cost competitive rate.
What do you think is behind China's relative success in at least churning out those electric vehicles, which have ended up in many developing country markets in the Gulf region, in Latin America? A few of those countries me and my team have visited. What do you make of the fact of that?
I mean, China has the scale right now in terms of consumer, the number of buyers just in the country alone is many times, you know, the next closest competitor being the United States. You know, we sell about 14 million vehicles to consumers and about another 3 million vehicles to fleets here, whereas China's market is upwards of 2 to 3 times that size. So you have the buyers, which enables many more entrants to come in. And certainly the investment has kept up so that we see, you know, hundreds of Chinese automakers entering the scene. You know, it remains to be seen if there are enough buyers in the market. And that's why I think a lot of these companies are looking elsewhere, looking in Latin America, Africa, Europe, and other places right now.
Xin Li, let me turn to you. You hold a podcast which is warmly received by car fans, and a chief theme is the new electric vehicles produced by China. How would you describe the quality and the capacity of China's electric vehicle?
I think a lot of new are coming out of the China EV market. So I can probably, you know, name 6 or 7, half a dozen. For example, new tech, the 800-volt silicon carbide platforms with 5C charging at speeds of 400 to 500 kilowatt. You're not going to see that anywhere else in the world. Battery swapping is already popularized. New battery chemistries that are using things like sodium ion with higher density, faster charging speed, and lower prices. New battery structures, the C2P, the C2B, cell-to-pack, cell-to-body, cell-to-chassis, these new acronyms, new manufacturing processes, new advanced driver assistant systems that takes you, you know, point to point, basically the vehicle drive itself, but the driver has to pay attention. This is pretty advanced in China. New ways of collaborating among the domestic companies, NIO with Geely and Changan in the battery swapping. New entrants, we have Xiaomi launching soon at the Beijing Auto Show. We have Huawei, big player. We have Lenovo is even playing part of it. And I think also worth mentioning is that EVs are becoming newer at faster iterations through ODA updates. The lifespan of a model in China, really 1 to 1.5 years before refresh.
Right. Xin Li, we've heard from the government work report, which indicates that the Chinese global sales of its new electric vehicles account for over 60% of the global total. In light of all these developments, how do you interpret the concept of new quality productive forces, which has been emphasized again and again by President Xi and by the Chinese leadership in really sending out policy signals to boost the Chinese economy?
Yeah, this new term is quite new to me. It's quite new, period. But I think what I've just mentioned, a bunch of, you know, how China has innovated in the smart EV sector, that's a classic example of this so-called new quality productive forces. And I think now, because of that, the rest of the world is really waking up. You know, part of the reason I believe why Apple kind of stopped is because China out-innovated. They already have these tech features and they're producing these at scale and at the cost. I think that's part of the reason why Apple, you know, looked away and trying to do something else.
Tyson, do you agree with Xing Lei, whereby he said Apple has been, you know, apparently out competed by their Chinese peers?
Yeah, I mean, it may be too early to say that definitively, but what I do absolutely agree with is that, you know, not only has the Chinese market forced the rest of the world to conform to its designs and tastes and features and other elements that the Chinese consumer has demanded, but I think that the industry has forced these companies to operate at that same scale and therefore with those same prices. I don't think there's any debate that the Chinese EV market has some of the cheapest EVs in the world. So when a company like Apple is surveying the global EV market, they are seeing that you not only have to compete with what the Chinese consumer wants, but you have to compete with the economics that the Chinese manufacturers bring. And that is a very cheap price. I can't say definitively that that's why they pulled out, but I would say that's part of their calculus.
Right, Tyson, in 2023, China's automobile production and sales exceeded 30 million units, maintaining its status as the world's leading country in automobile production and sales for 15 consecutive years. Now, with 30 million vehicles, it means that for every three new cars sold, one is made in China. How do you see these dominance influencing the global automotive industry, let's say, in terms of marketing and pricing?
I think most of the companies now are realizing that to compete with a number of the Chinese automakers, that it will take much more aggressive pricing. I think we've seen it even from Tesla having to get much more aggressive in their prices to maintain their lead, certainly in the U.S., but now, as we know, have fallen to number two globally behind BYD in EV sales. So I think it is forcing a lot of automakers to have to think differently and to get to that level of scale. You know, one thing we're seeing here in the U.S. is that there is still a very strong demand here in the U.S. for internal combustion engines. And many of the players here in the U.S. market have sort of turned back to that part of the market, which would be their strength, and really slowing down their investment in the EV space. I think that's possibly a strategic error at this point, because we know that globally, the Chinese market is influencing how quickly the rest of the world will convert to electric vehicles and to NEVs in general. So that turning back right now to ICEs is probably a short-term gain, but perhaps giving up long-term advantage for these companies. So I see that the market has really influenced not only, you know, what we're designing and taking into account Chinese tastes and preferences, but again, really competing at that much more aggressive price point.
Right. Let me ask you, Xing Lei. China has held the top spot in the production and sales of new energy vehicles for nine consecutive years, has been instrumental in driving the transformation of the global automobile industry. How do you think has the new energy vehicle industry changed in face of China's rise?
9 years, China has been a big NEV market. But if we go back 10 years or even 15 years, when China put in that 10-city, 1,000 NEV project, I think it's a culmination of this plan, and now we're finally seeing its fruition. And I think some of the people outside of China might be surprised that it seemed that this had only been happening recently. But in fact, this is years in the making. And now we're actually going into a period where China is moving away from a domestic-led market to a export overseas led market, as you've seen the numbers.
Right, talking about overseas competition and overseas supply chain positioning, in the first 2 months of 2024, GAC Iron's factory in Thailand officially started production with a planned annual capacity of 50,000 vehicles. At the same time, BYD signed a land pre-purchase agreement to build a passenger vehicle factory in Hungary, that is a European Union member state. It will be the first Chinese automobile company with a passenger car factory in the European Union. How do you perceive the future prospects of an EV venturing into the European market and from China, and given the, you know, the very volatile geopolitical situation.
So you're not global if you're not in Europe or, you know, eventually in the US. So what you're seeing happening is after importing of these EVs, now you're seeing actions of building locally. And back to here on the state side, really the headline has been China setting up shop in Mexico, whether it's the EV players, whether it's the auto players, whether it's the battery companies. And I think Mexico would be a important hub for now for that part of the region and South America, with US and North America eventually, depending on, you know, the geopolitical landscape, because this is an election year here in the US, so there's a lot of, recently there's been a lot of geopolitical, you know, actions being taken in Europe as well.
Xinli, let's talk about the US domestic politics, where President Joe Biden just issued warnings where he would impose control and certainly stepping up scrutiny first on parts and components and potentially finished products concerning Chinese electric vehicles involving the US market. How do you interpret that move?
It's a bit of political folly during this current presidential election. I think a lot of things, this so-called threat, I think it's overblown. I mean, some of the words used in that statement that was announced by White House, I mean, China would flood the market. It hasn't happened. No Chinese domestic brand, except the ones such as Volvo, Polestar, some of the Buicks, built in China, so only sold in China, but no Chinese indigenous brands are on sale yet. So I think given the current election year and the environment, I think the China companies, they're, again, as I said, they're studying this closely and they'll be tactical on their moves going forward.
Tyson, what do you think? Why is Joe Biden targeting the Chinese EV market, potentially working with the US market and consumers?
Yeah, the seeming contradiction in many Western countries, including the US, is that the governments are incentivizing consumers to buy EVs because they're too expensive. So we give incentives to consumers, and yet at the same time are concerned that prices get too low with the entry of Chinese EVs and automakers into Western automotive markets. So the governments are trying to fight this battle of both too high EVs and yet not wanting low price EVs. And the reason is, I mean, governments are in particular very protective of their national automotive industries, like they are many other national industries such as beer industries and other sorts of highly identifiable nationals of pride. But what we really see is that they want to protect their manufacturing base. And a lot of politicians give speeches about protecting that base of the production. And so that's why we have these tariffs and other protective measures in place here in Western economies, which is to protect the manufacturing base. And it's a very good political statement, but it's also good for the economy. And most of the Western markets don't want to lose their manufacturing edge. They know that consumers are going to spend their money on a car one way or another, no matter who it comes from. But yet there is that sense of protecting how the vehicles are made and where they're made. And so we see a lot of rhetoric coming out from both presidential candidates in the United States about protecting U.S. workers. And we will see that also in many Western countries. We saw Europe get much more stringent as well, very similarly responding to the perceived threat of low-priced Chinese EVs entering their markets as well.
Do you think those policies, those potential policies, are resonating with Joe Biden's or even Trump's constituents in the so-called Rust Belt? You're in Detroit, Michigan, correct? And as far as I understand, those regions are crucial for any incoming U.S. president.
Yeah, they tend to resonate well with a lot of voters, particularly in the Midwest, where you do find a very large concentration of automotive manufacturing and parts supplies, in addition to many other industries, where workers have seen a lot of the jobs move away, in some cases to nearby Mexico. But in many cases, you know, as mentioned, vehicles like Buick are brought in now, are imported from China to the U.S. So those workers, the message does resonate well. that a president will protect their interest with measures to keep their manufacturing jobs. But again, you know, as I said, the governments are at the same time incentivizing consumers to lower the price of EVs. If the goal is a lower price EV, there are ways to bring in those from China and other suppliers. But, you know, as mentioned, the U.S. currently has no true 100% Chinese-owned company operating here. There still is basically a closed market in the U.S.
Right. Xinlei, a decade ago, if you think about it, China-Germany cooperation involved German car manufacturing providing technology while China handled production. Now, with China's rapid progress in R&D and high tech, what new opportunities do you see for international collaboration or partnership between China and its external partners?
Yeah, I mean, what you just described, the script has been flipped. And I mentioned Volkswagen investing into XPeng and Stellantis investing into Leapmotor. And we're going to see more of these. A lot of these new tech features, innovative, you know, user experience, autonomous driving, connectivity, they're more prevalent in China. There's more customer acceptance. So in order to compete, I think some of these international companies, you know, big, well-established international automakers, they will have to, you know, through whether investment, whether, you know, even tech transfer, that they will need help from these domestic new players who are much faster at developing these tech and putting them onto vehicles. I think we hear a lot about this China speed, and that's where exactly this international automakers, they can no longer depend, you know, for the past 40 years that they would develop something back in home and then, you know, put it into the vehicle in China, but it no longer works that way.
Right. Tyson, we've heard so much about shore-chaining and friend-shoring. When you think about the geopolitical situation since 2017, 2018, how important are Chinese automobile companies in the global supply chain, or rather maintaining the relative stability of the global supply chain?
Yeah, I mean, I think the events of the past several years have shown, you know, very clearly that every vehicle essentially in production anywhere in the world contains parts sourced from China. And it's a global industry that I think has woken up to the fact that long supply chains, no matter where they come from, whether it's from Asia or Africa or other parts, are really susceptible now to geopolitical events like what we're seeing in the Red Sea and the Persian Gulf. When the shipping companies have to go all the way around Africa to get to Europe, that adds a lot of cost. So I think we're going to see further transitioning here to onshoring or friendshoring, where, you know, you do have your manufacturing base closer to home than it was before. But I think it's been made pretty clear to us over the past several years, and in the U.S. in particular, this year, when more stringent requirements went into effect to receive the federal incentive on EVs, and we actually added a stipulation that if there's a mineral sourcing coming through China, those vehicles wouldn't qualify for the $7,500 incentive from the government. Wow. And on January 1st, we saw most EVs fall out of that ability to qualify, which means that nearly every single EV sold in the United States contains critical parts coming from China. But I would just say, you know, it has been made clear since 2019 that the supply chain was a little too long, the tails were too long. And so we're seeing a lot of movement toward bringing production closer to home, even in light of these geopolitical events and you know, more aggressive stance on wanting to protect native industries.
Right. Xinlei, I do have some China-related questions. Here in China, people are saying many different things about electric vehicles. Some say the challenge of having vehicles without charging stations, and some are complaining, rather, that you know, having charging stations without vehicles, they have this like a battery anxiety or a fear of running out of battery on the street if they owned an electric vehicle. How widespread is this anxiety, as far as you know?
I wouldn't say it's the anxiety is as big as here in the U.S. I spent 2 months back last summer, and I tested out several EVs and the charging infrastructure. And the way I could describe it is, I mean, the big cities, I don't think there's any anxiety. I think a very important reason that it's different here than the U.S. is China has one standard. And here, you're seeing automakers, you know, adapting the Tesla NACS standard, while there's many others that are still using the CCS standards. Whereas in China, it's any charger that you go to, it's a scan and charge process because the charging port is standardized. And also the availability and the quality, as well as the network, it's all there. I mean, at least in the big cities. That's what I've experienced.
Right. Tyson, we've heard from the Chinese premier when he said that China's economy is expected to grow around 5%, or at least that is the target. How would you evaluate that goal? How do you see that becoming a reality?
We are measuring at J.D. Power how consumers are voting, both with their stated opinion about the vehicles they own, as well as with their wallets when they are buying vehicles. And we are taking that level of data, and we are watching very closely what is motivating consumers to buy their vehicles right now. And so we're watching both the price metrics for new and used vehicles, watching that very closely to ensure that, you know, as the economies are growing, both of China, Western Europe, United States, that consumers are able to afford their vehicles. Right now, the biggest concern, I think, globally in the automotive industry is the affordability of vehicles. Most consumers are seeing prices go up, and we are seeing a very high interest rate environment out there. And so as we're seeing economies grow, as we're seeing, you know, 5% growth, China target is a very aggressive, strong growth rate. That will enable many more consumers to get in the market. And at J.D. Power, as they enter, we will be watching closely to see, you know, what they're trading in, what sort of motivated them, and how that new vehicle is performing in their lives, and if they are enjoying the ownership process.
Tyson Jomini and Xing Lei, thank you both for joining us at this hour. And that's it for this edition of The Hub. Thank you so much for tuning in. Our news coverage continues on CGTN. Bye and take care.